Introducing the Dog Nerd Network, a support community for dog business owners. You can get free weekly trending audios, content prompts, and marketing tips for your dog biz. Want more? Join the monthly membership for live Q&A calls, courses, resources, coupons, collaborations, and more. Go to join.dognerd.net or click the link in the show notes. Well, welcome to Dog Training Bites. The show where canine professionals share their key takeaways, big aha moments, and hardest lessons learned from working with dogs. I'm Madison, certified dog trainer and behavior consultant, and dogs are my life. Every day, I get to coach guardians and other trainers into a deeper understanding of canine behavior. But let's face it. Sometimes, dog training really bites. And that's okay, because when it does, we learn a lot. This podcast is all about sharing the lessons learned from experience. Because the stories of when it got tough, or when we made a mistake, that's when we learn the lessons worth learning. And it's time we share those with the world. I'll be talking to dog trainers and other pet professionals about times that working with dogs, well, bit. Not literally. Maybe literally. What's most important here on this show, what did they walk away with? What did they learn? How did it shape their approach today? Welcome to Dog Training Bites, the show where pet professionals share personal lessons that you won't find in any textbook. My heart is so full today to introduce someone incredibly special to me, client turned apprentice turned mentorship student and friend somewhere along that journey, Jordan Hurt. Jordan has been a dog walker since 2021, and earlier this year, a client of mine with her personal dog, Asuka, who we will talk about here in a moment. Following an apprenticeship with Sailor Jerry the dog trainer and Tulsa Pack Athletics, Jordan graduated from my canine behavior mentorship and continues to impress me every day with her ability to quickly incorporate new learning into her training approach. Her area of expertise is sensitive dogs that come from a shelter or rescue setting. Hey, Jordan, welcome.
Thank you so much. Hi, Madison. I'm super happy to be here and happy new year.
Happy new year. I am so thrilled for this. Like I said, it all feels very, very personal to me because I feel super invested in your journey thus far. And it's wild to think that it's only been a year or less that we've been in each other's lives, but it has been quite the year. So I really want to start with a question that I already know a lot about our girl, but please do tell the wonderful listeners out there about Miss Asuka.
So Asuka is an American Staffordshire. She is a blue nose. As far as we know, she's about 11 years old, somewhere between 9 and 11. She came from a shelter in 2020, and the only thing we know about her history is that she was a breeding dog. She is super goofy, super lazy, and has big, giant feelings that we've done a lot of work on. So since I got her, it's been a really big roller coaster, and we ended up finding that most of her behavioral issues were actually medical. So my experiences in the industry, and especially with you, Madison, has guided us to her being a brand new dog.
It's been really incredible to be a part of that investigation. This was a classic example of just needing to play detective and needing to figure out what was going on and what the dog in front of us was experiencing. It wasn't necessarily a matter of how do we train this dog to behave the way that we want her to behave. She was struggling to exist in the world, and we couldn't figure out why until we really started to see patterns of behaviors that were indicating a physical condition. And I know that that's something that you were going to be exploring and continuing to explore for the rest of her life and helping her be comfortable and working through the ailments of becoming an older gal. That's certainly a part of it. I'm starting to experience the very beginnings of that with Remy. So I do understand. All right, Jordan, what story do you have for us today?
So for security and privacy purposes, I'm going to rename the dog. So we're going to call him Larry.
Larry.
I don't know why that's the name I came up with, but
no,
it is.
It's perfect. Tell us all about Larry.
So Larry was a 2-year-old pit master intact, and he lived in my geographical area, which is Morrisville, Pennsylvania, in a 2-bedroom apartment. And Larry was the first dog walking client, like daily client that I ever received.
Before Oh, wow.
him, yeah, before him, I was only boarding dogs in my house. And as I started to realize what was going on with Asuka, we decided to stop having dogs in the home. And so I branched out to take walk-in clients. And Larry was the first one that I got. And within the first 2 days that I started walking Larry, I realized that Larry had a problem with ferocious humping.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it was something I had never experienced before. I didn't know what to do. But at the end of, I think, the second or third day, I had to send a message to his guardian because I was covered in bruises from my hips to my toes. And so this was a situation that changed everything for me. And so when I reached out to his guardian and I told her that I had all these bruises and I was like, I don't know what to do. She was like, yeah, that's pretty normal.
Oh, no.
And so, yeah, so it was a situation that was super big for me. And that was the moment that I realized that walking dogs is not just like putting a leash on them and taking them for a walk. It's almost never that simple.
No, apparently it's a full contact sport.
yeah, it really can be. And so like it got to the point where when walking him, the pain was so much that I came to a point where I had no choice but to either cut him off as a client or find a way to help him. Mm. And I am the type of person who refuses to quit. I refuse to give up once I have my mind set to something.
Love that about you.
This was before Tulsa Pack. And we'll get to that because this is a situation that led me to Tulsa Pack. It was like the final decision maker. So the area that I walked Larry in was actually a blessing. We walked him around this big cemetery next to their house, which is like less than a quarter mile from there. And the whole cemetery was gated in and off of a main road. So anytime that Larry would do this humping thing, it would happen out of nowhere. And I had no good knowledge about dogs at the time, so I couldn't tell when it was going to occur at first.
Right.
And so we would just be walking down the street and he would suddenly get excited and latch himself onto my leg. And I would have to walk him attached to my leg to the closest gate that I could find. And I would attach his leash to the gate and back up.
Just tethering, and
this dog had the loudest scream that I have ever heard of any dog. And he would just stand there pulling on the leash and screaming bloody murder in my face.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I saw neighbors come outside and like looking like, are you killing it? And no, right. No, it's okay. And so this was kind of one of the things that led me in, like started my interest in becoming a dog trainer, because somehow I kind of knew in the moment that saying or doing anything other than attaching him to the gate and backing up wasn't going to help. So I would just stand there and watch him freak out. And like, I always felt so bad watching him like struggle with his emotions like this and like trying to figure out what can I do. So I would just stand there and wait until he stopped. And I would have to wait until the stinging in my leg stopped because
wow.
His nails were unkempt as well. And so would dig. So I figured out that if I slowly approach him without saying or doing anything, and I like would slowly come up to him, he would sometimes start right up again. And I think, you know, now when I look back, I realized that that had to do with the environment and what was happening around him. But at the time, I had no idea what was going to. So anyway, if I was able to get his leash off of the gate, then he would receive a reward. And at the time, my reward of choice was always cheese. I always had cheese on me.
Absolutely.
And so we got to this point where I figured out that that would work in the moment to get him to stop. And so we repeated that, and I walked him 5 to 6 days a week, sometimes twice a day. And it took about 3 weeks until we had our first successful humpless walk. And I just remember like
the humpless walk, the Holy Grail.
Yeah, exactly. And it was such a feeling of pride for me because I was at home, like, struggling with Asuka still. And so it was this feeling that, like, I was able to help him, and I finally had success in this moment. And I came home to my husband, and I remember telling my husband, like, I know that it was very painful, but I think do this forever. Like, I could really do this, even, like, all pain aside.
So, you know, I think that's the positive reinforcement effect on humans. When we see the effect of something that we are doing with a dog, our dog, a creature, and we see the lessons click and we see the behavior change, that reinforces us and that makes us more likely to repeat the behavior. I had a friend point that out to me once and it blew my mind.
I mean, it really is. And it's like just this overwhelming feeling of like just happiness, you know? And so during that time, like I could also tell based on his home environment, which I won't go into too much detail about, but it wasn't the best. And he didn't really have guardians around that attended to his needs for the most part. And so I knew that he needed more. And so like my appointments are a half an hour long strict. But with him, I was so dedicated because I had got him to stop humping me that I wanted to see more. So during that time, I also went out and I bought a flirt pole for the first time. I'd never used one other than with a cat, of course. But right. I bought a flirt pole and I bought a ton of cheese and I spent an hour with him every single day, 5 to 6 days a week. And we would play with the flirt pole. And
lucky Larry.
And by the time that I didn't have him as a client anymore, I mean, he was a completely different dog. He had a perfect heel. He could walk past cats and dogs and people without any issues. And mind you, this is still before I reached out to Tulsa Pack. And like that flirt pole, I have videos of this dog taking the flirt pole from me and he would carry it home.
Aww.
It was the most adorable thing I've ever seen in my life. So, and like everything that I used to help train him in those moments was stuff that I took from Jerry's Instagram. Like I just was like, I have to help, you know?
Yeah.
So I watched her, and once I found her, I found you. And so like, I was always following you guys before I ended up there. And it was just such a crazy situation to go from like what he was at first to like just this super happy, play loving, like obedient. I don't really like that word, but obedient dog is the best way for me to describe it. And it was just amazing.
It must be hard both to really affect change and then also to, I guess, feel like you're doing as much as you can when a client is a walking client and not a training client. And for that reason, you only have access to them for 30 minutes and in a certain context. And some guardians might be super open to more and extra, and some guardians might not be. How have you sort of, I don't know, juggled that before becoming a trainer and as you're now transitioning to trainer?
So that was one of the huge things that I had to learn. And there were a couple of things. And first was I immediately realized how easy it was for me to work with Larry and how much information he absorbed in just like these little bits of time. And then realizing that when I went home to Asuka and I would try these same practices, none of it worked. And I just was so unbelievably confused that was what pushed me to reach out to Tulsa Pack in the first place. I remember turning to my husband and being like, oh, like Larry's a totally different dog and I've only been with him for a couple of months. Like I need help with Asuka. Like I need to learn more. There's something that I am missing. Mm-hmm. And so that was when I reached out to Jerry in the first place and like noticing these massive differences between Larry and Asuka and the other dogs that I worked with, the clients after him and before him, like the boarding dogs that I had in the house, I had to realize that I feel like a lot of the time, and it's not on purpose, but a lot of the time, guardians just aren't listening to their dog.
Yeah.
They're like stuck in that, like a linear kind of mind frame based on the old school knowledge that we have about dogs in the general public. And they're just kind of stuck in that.
A very specific and narrow slice of dog training that made its way into mainstream. And so I agree. I think there is this sort of public understanding that is not necessarily in line with what we would use as an approach.
Right. And so, like, as being, especially as I came closer to accepting that I wanted to be a dog trainer, I had to realize, first and foremost, not to take things personally, because there's a disconnect between being a dog walker and a dog trainer. And you have to learn where to draw that line and where to say, like, unfortunately, I love this dog and I'm going to think about them for the rest of my life, but it's not my responsibility. And unless at this point I can do this, unless their owner or their guardian wants to bring me as their specific trainer, I can't devote everything I have. Right. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. That's an imbalance, and it leads to very, very quick compassion fatigue and burnout in this line of work if we're not very careful. So I applaud your boundaries. You know, I will always encourage you to set and keep those boundaries.
Yeah. And it took a while. I mean, that was definitely the first situation where I felt really, really frustrated with that kind of situation, but it wasn't the last. You know, I've had plenty of other experiences since, and it's just shaped everything that I view in dog training, and it reinforces it as I learn more and more and more, because it tends to be the same type of situation with training clients as well. If the guardian is not willing to, and this is an analogy I'm taking from Jerry, if the guardian's not willing to come take a seat at the table, then there is almost nothing that we can do for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and so sometimes that with walking clients reserves me to not being able to help. And sometimes they come forward and they do take a seat at the table and they are blocked at just wanting the help that I can give them as their walker, and they don't want to bridge into training. And that's okay. And it's about learning not to take it personally. And so, like, it shaped this idea for me that dogs themselves are individuals, and because of the communication boundary, I feel that they're more complicated, and it's more complicated to work with them than it is to work with humans. And so, like, we have to listen to them to find the solution. We have to really pay attention to what the dog is telling them. And so, like, since becoming a trainer, I've found that with the dogs, I try different variations of the same lessons with every single dog I meet, because every single one is different and learns things differently and has a different way of expressing what they need.
Was that one of the lasting lessons from Larry? Look at that alliteration right there.
Yes, absolutely. Because of, like I said, the stark differences between how the training helped Larry and how it didn't help Asuka is like this, it's just this massive difference. And since I worked with other dogs too, that was before even my mentorship or education, what made me realize that it's important to pay attention to what the dog's saying through their behaviors, their body language, and their likes and dislikes.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're always talking to us.
Oh, they are. We just got to listen. Well, thank you so much, Jordan, for sharing your story. Is there anything else that you'd like the listeners to know about you or what you do, or if you'd like to plug anything that you're working on?
Yeah, I am totally open to clients right now. I am looking to get my business really up and running and find some clients in my area, in the Marshall, Pennsylvania area. I do offer hybrid or virtual, or I'm open to considering in-person.
What is the nearest metropolitan area to you?
Philadelphia.
Okay. How far are you from Trenton?
Trenton's pretty close too. I'm only about 5 to 10 minutes from Trenton.
Okay. So that's all kind of the area to be looking at. Great. Well, you can connect with Jordan on Instagram at seeking_foundations and check the show notes for more information about her business. Thank you for joining us in the world of Dog Training Bites, where every challenge brings a lesson worth sinking our teeth into. See you next time. Dog Training Bites was created, produced, and edited by Madison Simpson. You can connect with me on Instagram at Dog Training Bites, that's BYTES, and at Freed by Training. For information on today's guest and resources for help with your dog or dog training education, visit www.dogtrainingbites.street. Looking for more? Listen to my other show, Unpacked, a clinical dog training podcast co-hosted by Sailor Jerry the Dog Trainer and produced by Straight Up Dog Talk, LLC.